Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. This is a podcast on One Heat Minute Productions Patreon where we talk about films 10 years in our review, things that are dominating our culture, things that are ripe for rediscovery, and actually relics that are lost, truly. And today I'm joined by one of my favorite people in the entire world. Recently doing the cover story, the Diego Luna profile, holy shit, and or the biggest show of the year. She's my favorite. She's Roxanne Haddadi. Hello. Hello.
Hey, buddy. Thank you so much.
Her face is covered. Stop. Please, for the love of God.
I know. I literally, every time I'm like, how is he the kindest man alive?
Oh,
and yet
stop.
He is. I don't know how he does it. But yeah, I'm very excited to join you here. Thank you for big upping the Diego piece. I would recommend for any of your, I know we are mostly cinephiles here, but for like people who are like, I can make 12 hours in my life to watch some television, you should watch Andor. I don't know why you haven't.
Can I just say, people haven't yet. There is a recent episode. I know you probably haven't caught it yet because it fairly recently dropped. There was a Star Wars The Force Awakens, which is also released in 2015. Episode of The Decade Project that I did with my dear friend Stu Coote, who's such a One Heat Minute staple, because Stu was one of those psychos who saw it like seven times at the theater because he was a Star Wars kid,
yeah.
Like most of us were, but he was like, we had a great chat about it. If you think that conversation didn't immediately get torpedoed so that we could just rave about Andor season two, you're wrong.
Love that.
And then a couple of my friends were like, I love how you guys just called this Star Wars The Force Awakens, but it's really you guys just talking about Andor 2. And I just had to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I don't know what the problem is. Couldn't possibly be me
just gushing about the only Star Wars show that's made me feel alive since the original trilogy. Maybe the prequel trilogy.
Probably the only Star Wars thing, like not just show,
yeah.
But like to me, better than the prequels, better than the sequels, just exceptional storytelling all around. I mean, I have talked about this online. See, now we're doing it. We're just gonna talk about Andor. But what I will say, is that I just think that
she gave me a look like Blakey, motherfucker, because every time we talk, I try to stay on target, and then you say something, and then I have to respond.
I try really hard. I know. All I'm going to say is I think Saw Gerrera's speech to Rido is like, I don't even know what, for me, is better this year. So, yeah. Andor, good. But we're not here to talk about Andor, Blake.
No,
we're here to talk about something else.
Yeah, we're here to talk about something else. I've been making a habit of going back to previous reviews that I've written and like really taking 10 years of more experience and intellect, basically, and better skill, and writing and revisiting the films, especially that we're talking about here. The title of the piece that actually threw up on my Patreon in anticipation of our episode, I called The Town That Drowned. Lost River is Ryan Gosling's directorial debut. He also wrote for this. It stars Christina Hendricks. It stars Matt Smith, Saoirse Ronan, Eva Mendes, the slimy and delicious Ben Mendelsohn. Rita Kadeb is amazing as the cab driver. It is an incredible little movie. Kind of, it says on, if you're looking at IMDb, it says 2014, but it's like 2014-15 because it was a little kind of like festival-y movie.
It had a
protracted release. I think I would share the I will share the trailer with you guys. You can listen to it in just a moment, but I'll just give you the gist because I know the trailer is kind of imperceptible on the plot. It's basically about a single mother. She's swept into a dark underworld. Her teenage son discovers a road that leads him to a secret underwater town. But take a listen to the trailer, and then Rox and I will come back and talk about the first times and now since the last 10 years of watching Lost River.
Looks like we're the only ones left.
There's still people here.
How can I help?
I'd like to stay in the house.
Do you mind if I ask why?
Because I have two boys and that is our home.
I found a road that goes underwater.
Must go down to that town.
What town?
They flooded a bunch of towns when they dammed the river. That's why they call this Lost River. As soon as the last town was drowned, a spell was cast. Everything that's going on around here, it's gotta be for some reason.
This is my country! This is my city! Don't let me...
Okay, Rox, tell me about your first time seeing this.
This was a theater watch for me, if I'm remembering correctly, which I think I am. But yeah, I think it was a theater watch. I did see it with my partner, and I remember this was after Gosling had been in some Refns, and I remember thinking, as many reviews at the title, like at the time, noted that it was like super Refn-esque, right?
Yes.
Like how it looked in terms of like the color grading, the compositions, very little dialogue, right? Like it just felt very much in Refn's shadow. And
Refn
I
and
still
Gianfranc.
Think that.
Refn and Gianfranc. Like,
absolutely.
Like
100%.
Because there's like the dreamlike Refn, and then there's like the dilapidation of a Gianfranc. And it's like he finds a way to like lightning rod those things for sure.
Yes, he finds a way to bring them together. And I remember exactly for those two reasons being like, okay, well, there really aren't better filmmakers you could rip off of.
Aesthetically, no, it's fine.
You know,
fine with me.
Like if you are gonna copy some dudes, Derek and Nicholas are fine to copy. And I remember, you know, admiring that and thinking like my man has taste. But also thinking, which I still think, that it sort of felt like our guy, Baby Goose, had this idea of sort of like a dark fairy tale, sort of like a return to Oz thing, but Oz is America. And I remember liking a lot of things within it, but not thinking that it entirely came together.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, how I still feel. But there is so much here in terms of like these weirdo vignettes and details and sort of suggestions that he makes about forgotten places and, as you said, towns that drown, that I really still love and I find like a lot of pleasure in watching. But there are also certain things about this movie that I really hate. So it's hard. It's like difficult to sort of talk about because it's so odd. But there are some ideas that are so fucking strong that you're like, wow, he was really onto something here about like how we forget and then how we destroy and how entertaining it is for us to watch other people's misery, because that's essentially like the club that Ben Mendelsohn makes in these towns that he says he creates in every single Lost River he visits. And I liked so much that it is sort of saying about like how you're tied to a place that you're born in and what does it take to sort of like break through the tragedy and the spell, right? There's a lot of like very interesting stuff. And you also, once you watch this, what I always remember is that like Gosling is like a Disney baby. I think there's so much in this movie that is sort of like weirdly Disney coded, and I appreciate that as well.
Oh, that is so yeah, funny. Those are Gosling the Disney baby. Oh, that's
Great. Aren't there like paparazzi photos of him at Disney? with people. Yeah. I think there are. We're gonna need to research that. Well, what did you think? What was your review?
My first reaction to it was like, I was like, I've been way more sophisticated in my rewrite, which people will see. But like my original thing was like, it's extremely haunting. Absolutely agree with you that the oddness of the, I guess this kind of like weird parasitic thing that happens in places where like the corpse of a town is dying, where Ben Mendelsohn becomes a ringleader, like that stuff like really fascinated me and disturbed me. And just the tactile nature of like desolate places, because I think that, you know, there's another movie that hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about a little bit later in the year, like 99 Homes, where it's about collapse and you know, there was a movie last year, Only Lovers Left Alive, also set in Detroit, which is like you're set in these husks of former thriving places. I really liked that. I loved how weird and extra Matt Smith was, like, just like he had me howling in the movie. I know it's probably bad, like it's like an ironic howl, but I remember walking out of it and being less like, oh, that was fantastic, and more like, that was weird enough that it lingered, you know, hung around. And then I remember later going like, I should give that a second shot. And then throughout the years, it's almost been a series. I can't clock how many times. I've probably seen it like five times now. But like every couple of years, I'd be like, you know, Lost River, that was like weird and interesting. And I can't really grasp onto all of the details. And so I feel like I've watched it fresh 5 times. Like one in the theater.
Love that. Okay.
And then I've kept coming back. And every time I've watched it, I'm like, I felt so many things you felt. I'm like, oh, look, he's really aping. There's like a little bit of Lynch in there. There's a hell of a lot of Refn in there. I'm like, but man, I'm okay with him aping those things. I'm fine.
Like, exactly.
I'm fine with you reaching for those guys. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't all hang together. But it does something. It's stuck around for me in that reason, because it just won't, I don't know, it won't be easily defined. And I think also the mood of when I've watched it a few times, I've been really down for it, like in watching a bunch of weird and wacky stuff, and it's like really hits. And other times you're not in such that mood, but you're kind of keen to watch it anyway, because you're like, oh, I'm on a baby goose run, I'll check this out. And you watch it and you're like, I don't know. Yeah, it's an oddity, but you know, I love oddities or curios. They feel like they scratch an itch for me. In my movie going diet.
So, I think that's all fair. I'm sorry to cut you off. All I was going to say to your Lynch point, and then I want you to go back to your thought, is that it feels so much like he took elements of Blue Velvet and then just sort of like threw them onto like Only God Forgives. Yeah. But then he also wanted to make sure to give Ava Mendez a really good role. So there's some Place Beyond the Pines stuff in there too. Yeah. Like it's almost funny because like, as we're talking about it, I almost feel like, is this movie just like Ryan Gosling's favorite things?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And what a hope for all of us out there to be like, and I say this like selfishly about myself, if I ever made a movie, there'd probably be some existential angst. There'd be some men looking out to an ocean. There'd be, you know, speaking to some of my other loves that aren't just like directly Michael Mann films. There might be like a guy sort of screaming naked in a hotel room, like having a breakdown, Francis Ford Coppola Apocalypse Now style. You would literally be like, oh, these are all like, this is every one of Blake's favorite shots he's ever seen in a movie. It's just, he's found a way to do it. I would hope if that was the one review note, it's like, this just feels like all your favorite things. I'd be like, thank you. That's exactly what I'm.
Great.
I haven't found my voice yet. So this is me like trying to do my version of the voices of all the things that inform me. Like, I feel like that's the coolest compliment, which is like, doesn't work, but man, he loved making it. He loved picking these guys and girls in this film. And he got great performances out of most. I also think that Ian de Katsteker, who plays Bones, who's Christina Hendricks, is Billy's eldest son. I think that for better or worse, Ryan Gosling casts like a guy who maybe reminded himself of him too, like of a younger 100%. Of a younger guy, but he doesn't have what Gosling now has, or maybe he couldn't access what Gosling could access. He reminds me of the Gosling in my maybe favorite meme of all time, which is like, remember that Ryan Gosling Whatever you say about Ryan Gosling, I remember when he was an absolute liability at cornerback, and it was like a meme of him from Remember the Titans. It's like that Gosling. It's not the Gosling who like went on to be his amazing thing that we appreciate.
It's not cool Gosling.
No.
It's just sort of like, who the fuck is this fucking guy? They let a walk-on on the team? Who is this guy?
This fucking guy.
He is very much a blank slate, which I guess maybe this movie needs. Because, like, for anyone who has not watched, which, like, you should, because we're going to spoil it for you. But general sense is, like, Detroit is failing. Entire neighborhoods are being, like, torn down. Houses being repossessed. We have very little backstory, not like we really need it, but we have very little backstory about like Christina Hendricks's whole deal, aside from the fact that she was like basically coerced into a predatory loan and she's now going to lose her house, which was her grandmother's house, which she grew up in. So because of that financial stress, you have her son played by this like sort of Gosling figure who starts like stripping houses.
The police sketch
copper.
Of Gosling.
Yeah, that's such a good way to put it. An Etch-a-Sketch of Ryan Gosling.
What does he look like? I think this man has no features. Okay, cool.
Yeah, he's just a blank void. But yeah, so he runs afoul of Matt Smith, who like runs this town in sort of like a Mad Max sort of scenario.
Yeah.
And then Christina Hendricks herself gets a job at this like weirdo club run by Ben Mendelsohn's character, but mostly run by Ava Mendez's character. And that whole part of the movie, I think, is I really can't find any flaws in it outside of the dialogue for Ben Mendelsohn, which is like really corny sometimes.
Yeah. And but also Ben Mendelsohn is a guy, and I think that Ryan Gosling would appreciate this, is like, I can give this guy will say fucking anything and people
He'll
can't
say
take
anything.
It. And Calgite, you know, he can say anything and people are like riveted by him.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Yeah. And yeah, I don't have that part of the movie. It's almost like she enters that door. Movie is flawless.
That is amazing door.
The amazing door. Flawless from top to bottom whenever they're in that club. And then the other stuff is harder because it's more conceptual and more like the sort of like the island of lost souls of like the people that are hanging around the town ish.
That's the fairy tale.
The fairy tale stuff.
Yeah.
Disney kid. And, sorry. Flashback.
Disney baby Ryan Gosling. Yeah. I have two issues with that whole storyline.
Mm.
One, I remember thinking this at the time and I still think this. I rewatched it last night. I still feel like, and I didn't research this, so I could just be, you know, talking out of nowhere and feel free to correct me. Yeah. But there are these moments where the cast seemingly interact, maybe with people who are actually from Detroit. Mm. And it's mostly the only Black characters in the film.
Yes.
And there is part of that, like a sliver of that, that feels sort of voyeuristic or like manipulative to me. Because so much of the movie is taking place in this clearly fantastical version of Detroit.
Yes.
So when you have these actual people who are like interacting with Matt Smith or like interacting with the other actors, there's like a weird disconnect for me where I wonder, like, are these people actors? Are they like people who just lived in Detroit and Ryan Gosling was like, your deal seems weird, be in my movie. I don't know. There's something about that friction, which I don't love, because I think it sort of feels, I don't know, I don't want to say exploitative, but there's something about it that feels sort of like off for me.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it, and this again is where we go back to your beautiful description of police sketch Ryan Gosling as Bones, is like, I don't like Matt Smith's performance, but like it's very maximalist. He's making a lot of choices. Saoirse Ronan is also here, and Saoirse Ronan is like genuinely amazing in pretty much everything, even when you cast her just as this sort of like waifish caretaker to her grandmother who is lost in the past. But in general, like, Saoirse and Matt Smith are doing a lot, and main guy Bones is not doing a lot. So there's also just this like performance imbalance in that part of the movie. Whereas Christina Hendricks and Ava Mendez in a scene together talking about like what these men do in the club to them, like that is a very even playing field of two actresses doing like amazing work together.
It feels like that's the A-League. That's the A.
Yeah.
The top tier. That's the NFL. And they're completely crushing it. And then you've got like the second string section, which is unfortunately, it's just because of the power imbalance, as you said. It's like you can only, my only metric for how good actors are is how good they act against other great actors who are really on
great
fire.
Great analysis.
And so for me, it's like all the big choices, you kind of needed him to be doing something bigger.
Yeah.
Something bigger, something more that was modulated. And I think it's really the trust of a director, right? They look at someone and they think that this person's going to be read, or their inner emotional life is going to read. I think that's what his great skill is. And so I don't begrudge him for the aspiration that, oh, this kid has got a lot of hope and he can get what I'm wanting to translate through the screen. And maybe he could see it through the monitor or see it on the set, but it just doesn't read. Like Matt Smith is trying to take on Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending in this movie. Like he's,
oh my God.
They're having a dialogue.
It's so big.
As big.
Yeah. And that's another thing too, which is exactly to your point, which is like this movie really thrives in maximalism, right? Maximalism or bizarre ideas that Gosling commits to fully, because in this club, basically in this nightclub, it is like these women are essentially play acting their own murders, right? Or their own violence against them. And it's very interesting that it is heavily women who are doing this. But like Ava Mendez's best performance is as this woman who goes out every night, like very coquettish and very playful, and lets herself get stabbed to death or like beheaded or whatever else. And the crowd loves it, right? Like that scene of the crowd, like being just straight up soaked in her blood.
Yeah.
And like clapping for it and like loving it, that's like some Dario Argento. Like that is like, again, if you're gonna do an homage, that's the homage to do. Like that's it. And then the shell idea is so, I really want your thoughts on the shell idea, because I think that again, that is like, that is Gosling, I think, cluing into something about how our society commodifies and makes women into plastic. And it's such an interesting idea for a man who then goes to co-star in Barbie as Ken. Like that is fascinating.
Like stay in your little plastic shell. But it's also like, it's two ways. It's like we commodify women, but also men are so, I don't know, like lizard brained.
Yeah.
And awful. That the only way we can protect you from once we have put you on the pedestal is to have a plastic cage for you to be interacted with so we can't hurt you. And it's because these weird power impulse things. And it's like he makes this little allegory and you're like, I don't know if you really got how it's like a poetic line in a great poem or a great novel or something, or someone's just said something, you know. And you're like, oh, that has echoes. I don't think I'm not sure. I would like to say that he did. He had great grander aspirations for what it could mean, but wasn't trying to be prescriptive. So just let it lie. But I definitely think he's saying something with that. And I think it's only more hilarious that now he's like Ken, right? it's only more hilarious that he's Ken. But at the time, I remember going like, oh, this is so dark that what keeps this audience satiated is the impression of murder and violence so that I can actually function in a society. And then if I want to be a VIP, I can go and almost like an avatar or like a video game first person. I'm like the first person killer here. That yeah. Those ideas are so rich, really incredible, incredible.
Yeah. And just shot, again, to our sort of like Refn Lynch comparisons, shot in such a like both beguiling and beautiful and incredibly unsettling way, because it's all like very soft pinks, very soft neons, and then you get to the plastic shell and it is just this like immobile Han Solo and carbonite sort yeah. of thing, where you understand how he does a very good job, and Christina Hendricks does as well, making us understand how claustrophobic and horrifying it is to be inside that space.
Yes.
Especially when we learn that there is a button that locks it, and that Ben Mendelsohn has a remote that unlocks it.
I don't want Ben Mendelsohn having a remote to unlock anything near me.
Never. I never want him to be in charge of anything unless he's being a sassy little bitch like Krennic.
Oh my God.
That's our Andor connection. That's
Can
it.
I tell you about the time? Did I tell you about the time that I interviewed Ben Mendelsohn?
No.
I interviewed Ben Mendelsohn for a movie that we adore, Killing Them Softly, on its Australian mm-hmm, release, mm-hmm. Andrew Dominic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And anyway, mm-hmm. I had this fantastic review with both those guys. It was a really big highlight. And then at the end, I thought I'd just be cheeky. And I go, Ben, just one last question. Could you understand a word that Tom Hardy was saying as Bane? And he just smiled. And he goes, I'm going to let that go. Well, in Australian terms, cricketing terms, he goes, I'm going to let that one go through to the keepers. Meaning I'm not even going to play at the ball. And he was speaking to another Aussie, so he knew exactly what I was saying. And then he hugged me afterwards and had a big cackle. Yeah, no, I didn't understand. It was great. It was
like, that's very funny.
It was a huge highlight of my life.
I love that. Very funny.
But that was when Mendo was like full sweet Mendo mode, as opposed to menacing, freakish, creepy Mendo mode, yeah, which he has commanded
just like
both.
Very, very creepy. And again, like, and this is sort of the power of Mendelsohn, is that, again, the dialogue they give him is bad.
Oh, no,
like,
it's not good.
His dialogue is like, I tweeted about this last night, but it was like, I like to fuck, and when I see a bad bitch, I can't control myself, or something else where you're like, objectively, this is horrible. And it's only because Ben Mendelsohn is Ben Mendelsohn that he can make it.
It's rap. It feels like rap lyrics, like bad rap lyrics. Yeah.
Like bad rap lyrics. Yeah. Like he sees himself as the head of this club. He can do and say whatever he wants. But Mendelsohn walks this line, I think, where you're both like, this is sort of pathetic and sort of funny.
Yes.
And also he's 100% serious and threatening because of how serious he is. And that's what makes that dance scene with Christina Hendricks in the shell so horrifying, and again, to me, so much like Blue Velvet, because you're like, objectively, there's something about this that should be amusing to me, like a grown man trying to seductively dance in front of this woman, but actually it's like one of the scariest things I've ever seen because of his certainty of his own power in that moment. And that is like very, as you said, very haunting for this film.
Talk about a shot that was unforgettable. Like, that's the one that just pops up in your subconscious every 6 months and you're like, oh Jesus, what the hell was that? Like, get out of there. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know that was, mm-hmm. I didn't mm-hmm. realize I still had you in the files. Just get out of my brain. But that,
yeah,
that's that. If there's anything worthwhile about anything that we do on the Decade Project, it's sometimes finding those things, because it's not holistically going to be a piece of work that is ultimately going to work. But sometimes the aspiration of these things and the swings that get taken and then maybe don't get re-pursued has such like powerful threads. It's like, man, I think, could we go number two? Is there another something that would ever get him back behind a director's chair? And obviously, you know, being a dad with a young family, I can completely empathize with like, no.
He's not going to go to this place again.
I'm not going to go to this place where I have to work, you know, 18-hour days and my wife is acting. Yeah. And you know, I mean, she's so amazing. She needs more work. She's incredible.
She's so good. And I also think what is also really interesting about this is, like, yes, we have talked about, like, all the like scary, unnerving, men are trash shit that this movie is doing. But there also are some scenes and moments that I think that I could be convinced that Gosling could just do an original fantasy or like yes. an original sort of like sci-fi. Because I think about the idea of that flooded town and the scene that gets us there, which is like Bones walking upon this like abandoned looking path. And then he comes upon all of the flooded streetlights
yes.
that look like Brontosaurus head like poking out of the water. It's very Jurassic Park. And I just think that image and then like the flooded dinosaurs and stuff that he finds under the water, there's something there. There's like an indication of his eye and his grasp of visuals that makes me think like he could probably do something that maybe would be more family friendly. I don't know, but it could have like a really strong sensibility behind it.
Like I would just, as soon as you said his eye, I'm like, who was his cinematographer on this? The cinematographer was Benoit Deby, who did Climax, Enter the Void, mm-hmm. Sisters, Brothers, Spring Breakers, done a lot of go. Miley Cyrus videos very recently, a lot of TV stuff. And I'm just trying to see some of these other things that he's done around the Lost River time. Yeah, it was bouncing. He did The Runaways. He's bounced into a few things, but like those are the big okay. ones. And I'm just like, yeah, this is a guy who was helping get that eye, but all that composition is him. Those are yeah. unforgettable. They're unforgettable shots. Those shots that you're describing, they're so fantastic. And yeah, look, I think, like
I know you said this, but I'm just seeing like back to back Spring Breakers to Lost River makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's like, and people might say Refn. It's like, oh no, it's Harmony Korine neon too. Like that's the neon he's going for. Grubby neon. Yes. Neon in a hotel yes. room. yes.
Yes. Yes. The kind of neon where you're like, oh, I'm both intrigued and also grossed out. Like, what is this? Is this like a black light? Am I going to see blood? Like, what is
happening? You're going to see something.
You're going to see something. But yeah, like I feel like this is so indicative of this conversation is like, there are these like moments that we can pick out of the film. But overall, you're like, yeah, the narrative is like this town is dying and eventually they leave. it's very cut and dry, but it's the texture and sort of the weird stuff that he puts inside that story
yeah.
that makes it so interesting and, to echo you, so worth every so often going back to be like, where from Ryan Gosling's mind did the idea of a nightclub with a mouth, like a yawning monster's mouth, like leading you into the abyss. Like, where did that, what Italian horror shit was he mainlining?
Oh, 100%.
Brought this into his mind.
One line I'm proud of in my piece that I rewrote was like, it may be derivative, but it is also possessed. And like, that's.
Yes. Wow.
It's sort of derivative. If you scratch the surface of the plotting, you'd be like, this is dumb. It doesn't, but style over plot any day of the week. The style is so good. Yeah. He's in such command of it. And for me, that's where I'm like, Lost River deserves to be rewatched again. And then like, and given some kind of second chances periodically. It's not going to be one you're going to have in a regular rotation, but some of the shots are so haunting and possessed that you're like, I'm going to keep going back to this and I'm going to keep checking it out and keep like trying to unlock whatever the hell he was trying to do. And unfortunately for everyone, he's not making movies, his own movies anymore. And I don't think it's the market for him to make it. And I don't think it's the time for him to make it. He's a happily married dad. No. His beautiful wife is now like being mum more than she's ever been an actor. And she's an amazing actor. Amazing actor, dramatic and comedic. Oh my god, I could watch that scene from The Other Guys with her and Will Ferrell every day. That's a movie to rewatch with Eva Mendes. Holy shit,
that's a movie to rewatch. That's important. But you know what's so funny is like, even in this conversation, we've been talking for like a half hour. That's like a third of the movie length.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very efficient in what it's trying to do. And I really think once you get past like the quirks of character names being Billy, Bones, Rat, Cat, and Bully, I think that there is a
and don't forget the inspired cab driver.
Yes. You're right. There is like I would say again, like Return to Oz. I think it is an odyssey that is awaiting you that will have familiar elements and also enough twists that you're just like, my man was on Rido. He was doing something else with his time, and it really comes through.
I'm bored.